for a little something extra from the Appleseed. And now, here's your host, Sam Payne.
It's great to have you with us for a little something extra here in the podcast. Just about every day, we post a full hour-long episode filled with stories for you and your family, and also a little something extra. Now, the Appleseed episodes are often filled with stories that have been passed down from teller to listener, from generation to generation to generation, as part of the oral tradition. But there are a lot of stories that we come across in the pages of books as well, and we thought we'd bring you one of those stories as today's Appleseed Extra. This, a short story. Story written by Mark Twain about a guy who gets trapped in a train car with what he believes is a box containing a body on its way home to be buried, but which in fact doesn't contain a body at all, only some Limburger cheese. Some hilarity ensues. The story will be read for you by Noah and Leah Kershisnik, Suzanne Christensen, and myself. It's called The Invalid's Story. And again, it's an old short story from Mark Twain. You'll enjoy it as today's Appleseed Extra.
It will be hard for you to believe that I, who am now but a shadow, was once a hale, hearty man 2 short years ago, a man of iron, a very athlete. Yet such is the simple truth. But stranger still is the way in which I lost my health. I lost it through helping to take care of a box of guns on a 200-mile railway journey one winter's night. It is the actual truth, and I will tell you about it.
One winter's night, 2 years ago.
I heard that my dearest boyhood friend and schoolmate had died the day before, and that his last utterance had been a desire that I would take his remains home to his poor old father and mother.
I was greatly shocked and grieved, but there was no time to waste in emotions. I must start at once.
I took the cart, marked with his parents' address, and hurried off through the whistling storm to the railway station.
Arrived there, I found the long white pine box which had been described to me. I fastened the card to it, saw it put safely aboard the express car, and then ran into the eating room to provide myself with a sandwich and some cigars.
When I returned, there was my coffin box back again, apparently, and a young fellow examining around it with a card in his hands.
I was astonished and puzzled. He began to nail on his card, and I rushed out to the express car to ask for an explanation.
But no, there was my box, all right, in the express car. It hadn't been disturbed.
The fact is that without my suspecting it, a prodigious mistake had been made. I was carrying off a box of guns which that young fellow had come to the station to ship to a rifle company in Peoria, Illinois, and he had got my corpse.
Just then, the conductor sung out,
"All aboard!"
And I jumped into the express car.
The expressman was there, hard at work, a plain man of 50 with a simple, honest, good-natured face and a breezy, practical heartiness in his general style.
As the train moved off, a stranger skipped into the car and set a package of peculiarly mature and capable Limburger cheese on one end of my coffin box, my box of guns.
That is to say, I know now that it was Limburger cheese? But at that time, I had never heard of the article in my life and was wholly ignorant of its character.
Well, we sped through the wild night. The bitter storm raged on. A cheerless misery stole over me. My heart went down, down, down.
And the old expressman made a brisk remark or two about the tempest and the Arctic weather, slammed his doors and bolted them, closed his window down tight, and then went bustling around here and there and yonder, setting things to rights, and all the time contentedly humming "Sweet By and By" in a low tone.
Presently, I began to detect a most evil and searching odor stealing about and on the frozen air.
This depressed my spirits still more, because, of course, I attributed it to my poor departed friend.
There was something infinitely saddening about his calling himself to my remembrance in this dumb, pathetic way, so it was hard to keep the tears back.
Moreover, it distressed me on account of the old expressman, who, I was afraid, might notice it.
However, he went humming tranquilly on and gave no sign, and for this I was grateful.
Grateful, yes, but still uneasy, and more uneasy every minute, for every minute that odor thickened up and got to be more and more gamey and hard to stand.
Presently, having got things arranged to his satisfaction, Thompson, the expressman's name was Thompson, as I found out in the course of the night, got some wood and made up a tremendous fire in his stove.
This distressed me more than I can tell, for I could not but feel that it was a mistake. I was sure that the effect would be deleterious upon my poor departed friend.
I said nothing, but I believed he was not choosing the right way.
Meantime, he was humming to himself just as before, and meantime, too, the stove was getting hotter and hotter, and the place closer and closer.
I felt myself growing pale and qualmish, but grieved in silence and said nothing.
Soon, I noticed that the sweet by-and-by was gradually fading out. Next, it ceased altogether, and there was an ominous stillness.
After a few moments, Thompson gasped once or twice, then moved toward the gun box, stood over that Limburger cheese part of a moment, and then came back and sat down near to me, looking a good deal impressed.
After a contemplative pause, he said, indicating the box,
"Friend of yourn?"
"Yes,"
I said with a sigh.
"He's pretty right, ain't he?"
Nothing further was said for perhaps a couple of minutes, each being busy with his own thoughts. Then Thompson said, in a low, odd voice,
"Sometimes it's uncertain whether they're really gone or not, you know. Although you think they're gone, you don't really know. I've had cases in my car. It's perfectly awful, because you don't know what minute they'll rise up and look at you!"
Then, after a pause and slightly lifting his elbow toward the box,
"But he ain't in no trance, no, sir."
We sat some time in meditative silence, listening to the wind and the roar of the train. Then Thompson said, with a good deal of feeling,
Well, we've all got to go. There ain't no getting around it. It's awful solemn and curious. Ain't nobody can get around it. All's got to go. One day you're hearty and strong."
Here he scrambled to his feet and broke a window pane and stretched his nose out at it for a moment or two. And sat down again while I struggled up and thrust my nose out at the same place. And this we kept on doing every now and then.
"And the next day he's cut down like the grass. And the places which knowed him then knows him no more forever, as scriptures say. Yes, indeedy. It's awful solemn and curious, but we've all got to go one time or another. There ain't no getting around it."
There was another long pause. Then,
"What did he die of?"
I said I didn't know.
"Well, how long's he been dead?"
I said.
2 or 3 days.
Thompson, with an injured look, said,
2 or 3 years, you mean?
Then he gave his views at considerable length about the unwisdom of putting off burials too long. Then he lounged off toward the box, stood a moment, then came back on a sharp trot and visited the broken window pane, observing,
"'Twould have been a darn sight better all around if they'd started him along last summer."
Thompson sat down and buried his face in his red handkerchief and began to slowly sway, rock his body, like one who's doing his best to endure the almost unendurable.
By this time, the fragrance, if you may call it a fragrance, was just about suffocating, as near as you can come at it. Thompson's face was turning gray, and I knew mine hadn't any color left in it.
By and by, Thompson rested his forehead in his left hand with his elbow on his knee and sort of waved his red handkerchief toward the box with his other hand and said,
"I've carried away many one of them, some of them considerable overdue, too, but this one, he just lays over them all and does it easy."
This recognition of my poor friend gratified me, in spite of the sad circumstances, because it had so much the sound of a compliment.
Pretty soon it was plain that something had got to be done. I suggested cigars.
Thompson thought it was a good idea. He said,
"Likely it'll modify him some."
We puffed gingerly along for a while and tried hard to imagine that things were improved.
But it wasn't any use. Before very long and without any consultation, both cigars were quietly dropped from our nerveless fingers at the same moment.
Thompson said with a sigh,
"No, Cap, it don't modify him worth a cent. Fact is, it makes him worse. It appears to stir up his ambition. What do you reckon we better do now?"
I was not able to suggest anything. Indeed, I had to be swallowing and swallowing all the time and did not like to trust myself to speak.
Thompson fell to maundering in a desultory and low-spirited way about the miserable experiences of this night, and he got to referring to my poor friend by various titles, sometimes military ones, sometimes civil ones, and I noticed that as fast as my poor friend's effectiveness grew, Thompson promoted him accordingly, gave him a bigger title.
Finally, he said,
I got an idea. Supposing we buckle down to it and give the colonel a bit of a shove toward the other end of the car. About 10 foot, say, he wouldn't have so much influence then, don't you reckon?
I said it was a good scheme, so we took a good fresh breath at the window pane, calculating to hold it till we got through, and then we bent over that deadly cheese and took a grip on the box.
Thompson nodded, all ready!
And we threw ourselves forward with all our might.
But Thompson slipped and slumped down with his nose on the cheese. And his breath got loose.
He gagged. He gagged and gasped and floundered up and made a break for the door, pawing the air and saying hoarsely,
Don't hinder me! Give me the road! I'm dying! Give me the road!
Out on the cold platform, I sat down and held his head a while, and he revived.
Presently, he said,
Well, do you reckon we started the general any?
I said, No. We hadn't budged him.
Well, then, that idea's up the flume. We gotta think of something else. He's suited where he is, I reckon. And if that's the way he feels about it and has made up his mind that he don't wish to be disturbed, you bet he's gonna have his own way in the business. Yeah, he holds all the trumps.
But we couldn't stay out there in that mad storm. We should have frozen to death.
So we went in again and shut the door and began to suffer once more and take turns at the break in the window.
By and by, as we were starting away from a station where we had stopped a moment, Thompson pranced in cheerily and exclaimed,
We're all right now. I reckon we got the Commodore this time. I judge I got the stuff here that'll take the tuck out of him.
It was carbolic acid. He drenched everything with it, rifle box, cheese, and all.
Then we sat down, feeling pretty hopeful. But it wasn't for long.
You see, the two perfumes began to mix. And then, well, pretty soon we made a break for the door. And out there, Thompson swabbed his face with his bandana and said in a kind of disheartened way,
It ain't no use. We can't buck again him. He just utilizes everything we put up to modify him with. And gives it his own flavor and plays it back on us. Why, Cap, don't you know, it's as much as 100 times worse in there now than it was when he first got a going. I never did see one of them warm up to his work so, take such an interest in it.
We went in again after we were frozen pretty stiff, but we couldn't stay in now.
So we just waltzed back and forth, freezing and thawing and stifling by turns.
In about an hour, we stopped at another station, and as we left it, Thompson came in with a bag and said,
Cap, I'm gonna chance him once more. Just this once, and if we don't fetch him this time, the thing for us to do is just throw up the sponge and withdraw from the canvas.
He had brought a lot of chicken feathers and dried apples and leaf tobacco and rags and old shoes and sulfur and asafoetida and one thing or another, and he piled them on a sheet iron in the middle of the floor and set fire to them.
When they got started, I couldn't see myself how the corpse could stand it. All that went before was just simply poetry to that smell.
But mind you, the original smell stood up out of it just as sublime as ever. In fact, these other smells just seemed to give it a better hold, and my, how rich it was.
I didn't make these reflections there. There wasn't time. Made them on the platform. Thompson got suffocated and fell, and before I got him dragged out by the collar, I was mighty near gone myself.
When we arrived, Thompson said dejectedly,
We gotta stay out of here. We gotta stay out here, Cap. We gotta do it. There ain't no other way. The governor wants to travel alone. And he's fixed so he can outvote us.
And presently he added,
And don't you know we're poisoned? It's our last trip. You can make up your mind to it. Typhoid fever is what we're gonna come from this. I can feel it a-coming right now. Yes, sir, we're elected just as soon as you're born.
We were taken from the platform at the next station an hour later, frozen and insensible, and I went straight off into a virulent fever and never knew anything again for 3 weeks.
I found out then that I had spent that awful night with a harmless box of rifles and a lot of innocent cheese. But the news was too late to save me.
Imagination had done its work and my health was permanently shattered. This is my last trip. I'm on my way home to die.
The Invalid Story by Mark Twain.
Recorded before a live audience, back when we could all get safely together. That was The Invalid's Story, performed by Noah and Leah Kirschisnik, Suzanne Christensen, and myself. And it's a story by Mark Twain about a guy who gets on board a train in company with what he thinks is a box containing the body of somebody going home to be buried, but which in the end contains not a body at all, just some Limburger cheese. Happy to bring that tale to you. You can find more at BYUradio.org. You can also download the BYU Radio app, and you'll find all kinds of ways to listen to all of the programs produced by BYU Radio. The Appleseed is pleased and proud to be part of that family of programs. Reach out to us. We love to hear from you. Send us an email at theappleseed@byu.edu. I'm Sam Payne. We'll see you next time on The Appleseed.
Thanks for joining us for a little something extra from The Appleseed. Google The Appleseed Podcast and subscribe for something new just about every day. The Appleseed with Sam Payne.